The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, for those of you maybe who weren't here in the morning, I'll recap a little bit what I've said and from a slightly different perspective. When we study the religious life of ancient India, the Buddhist life, and before that, we study texts. That's all we have left that survives. And their earliest texts show that the Indian people there, at least in those texts, were doing rituals to honor, feed, get into good graces of gods. And then at some point in the centuries before Buddhism, there became a change, and there was a strong movement to stop externalizing, or not just limit themselves to externalizing their gods out there, but to see how the gods and the cosmos and everything could also be found in oneself. And so there was this kind of these connections or equivalences established between all kinds of things that had been seen as external spiritual realities to discovering what was inside. And there was a quest to see and find what was ultimately true in oneself. And Buddhism arose a little bit inheriting many of the ideas of that time. And perhaps one of them was this idea of the five faculties. We don't know if it was the Buddha or was inherited from the tradition. And these five faculties that we have, these five capacities or functions that we have, were called the five indriya, the five faculties of Indriya, or belonging to Indra, which is was the supreme god of the pantheon of that time, pantheon of gods. And as the supreme kind of lord of the pantheon, he was called the controller of all, the ruler of all, the lord of all. And so by seeing Indra in oneself, the divinity divine in oneself, one was kind of seeing this equivalence, or the focus was here in oneself. And it was focused on such things as faith, our capacity to make energy or effort, our capacity for being mindful or aware, our capacity to have samadhi, to be concentrated, settled, unified state, and the capacity to become wise, to have wisdom. And these were not things that one took from the outside, but rather functions and capacities, abilities that all human beings have. And they have a tremendously important role in our lives, so they were called Indriya, and they control. They're kind of lords or controllers of at least our inner life, our internal life. And faith and the absence of it can have a huge impact. Having energy or effort or engagement with our life can be beneficial or harmful, and having mindfulness is said to be always beneficial. Samadhi is an amazingly beneficial power that we have inside. And then this wisdom thing. In the Buddhist ideas, wisdom is always beneficial. So to tap into these powers, these capacities we have, and to strengthen them is an important part of the spiritual development in Buddhism. And for many people who do mindfulness practice, these five faculties kind of follow in the wake of it. If you do diligent, ongoing mindfulness practice over time, these other five faculties come along and it becomes strong. But they can also be attended to, cared for, noticed, and we can help them strengthen. One of the points I was making today is that these faculties we have, these capacities we have, that they're a natural functioning, and as a natural functioning, they can function without our willful effort. They can function without us being in the control tower, us being thinking we're in charge, and you know, directing them and telling you, you know, you come along now and do this. But they can flow through us and out of us, or flow through us, kind of like a well spring flowing up into a lake. And part of practice is not only to engage these, but to allow them to surface, to get out of the way, as if we're in a kind of a natural state, that's what will flow through us. They'll be strong. So if we're tense, that's not, in this kind of language, a natural state. To be relaxed is more natural. To be attached to our thoughts and things of the world and preoccupied with them is not the natural state, but be relaxed, free, and open is more natural. And so then the natural functionings can work better. If we're lost in the past and the future, we're kind of not really here for this to support the natural functioning that happens when we're present for our life. And these things can kind of flow out through us. And we can see that with one translations of the word sadha, usually translated as faith, when we see it as confidence. Confidence, you're more likely to see it as some, you know, more like a faculty or a capacity we have, whereas sometimes faith maybe can be seen as a little more intellectual, you know, have faith in a creed, an idea, or a person or something. But to have confidence in oneself, confidence in one's practice, and kind of to be in the world with confidence is to have a certain poise and sense of safety and sense of engagement that kind of comes from the inside. And if you see someone who seems superbly confident, you can sometimes just see it from a distance and how they carry themselves and how they are. If someone is the opposite of confident, you can sometimes see it in the distance. You see, oh, that person looks pretty afraid or timid or something. So it's more like an embodied expression of something. And so they kind of come from within and flow out. And I like to think of them, you know, maybe you can think a little bit like the qualities of heart and that flow out of the heart. And so today I've talked a little bit about some of the other faculties, but this evening I want to talk about wisdom. And wisdom as one of these faculties is not acquired knowledge. And it's not the kind of wisdom you have from having life experience. And you know that you've learned from hard experience that you don't drive through red lights, stop traffic lights because of all the accidents you've been in. And so then you've acquired I've gotten wise about those traffic lights. But that's kind of then remembered knowledge, remembered wisdom, so it's an idea or something. Wisdom in this tradition is more a capacity to see or discern that we carry with us. And it's a wisdom that's acquired or discovered in the process of living our lives. And some of those discoveries that we carry with us as memories, and they're useful, and so they support us. But then they're a little bit coming from a different place in their memory and understanding, as opposed to the idea is to, panya, is to really see, discern, here and now. And so it's a kind of seeing, a little bit more than a way of knowing. And sometimes I would like to translate the word panya as insight, and to emphasize this thing that really involves a direct kind of seeing of experience and seeing something, but and an understanding comes with that, and so that. But the genesis of this wisdom, so it's not external, it's not memories of the mind, it's not from a book, but rather it's something that comes from the heart's capacity to see. And one of the descriptions of a very important turning point in Buddhist practice in which when the wisdom eye opens. So they have the eye of wisdom to be able to, the eye of the Dharma eye, and to be able to see in a certain way. But it's something that we see, if you go along with me, from the heart outwards. That's the genesis of it. And it's kind of like, and it's not you that's seeing, but the heart that sees. It's not exactly a personal capacity that you can take credit for, but rather it's a capacity to have to be open and present for, I like to use the word revelation. Maybe it's the poor use of the word, the way we use it in English. It's not like some being is channeling or revealing something to you, but the feeling is that the way you see things in the world, you're not constructing it, you're not engineering it, you're not thinking about it, you're not analyzing it, and therefore understanding, but rather you are it's being shown to you. So what you look at, does it say cool on it or say heat? Can you tell? If it's, it says cool?
It says cold.
Oh, it's on a hold. So I don't know, you might push the system button and see if you can see it say cool without the hold. And if it can't, then it's supposed to be that way. And yeah, and also maybe the side doors here too, and the window. So so what we're doing in practice is partly preparing ourselves in such a way, or setting ourselves up in such a way, that the heart is able to see or to know what's going on. So it can be receptive, so it can allow reality to show itself to you. And why I wanted to emphasize this idea that it's in the heart, all these faculties. There it is. Came on. And all we had to do is open the doors and there. Why I wanted to emphasize this thing about the heart, partly because that's an alternative place for where the mind is. Some people say it's in the heart, citta. But also, I think of the heart as kind of like the innermost place inside of us. And the wisdom, the understanding, or the seeing flows out from there. And as it and what happens if the seeing starts at the innermost place and flows out, what does it see first? It sees you. Because it has to go through you before it can get out into the world. And so it's kind of impersonal, but it sees you first. And so what does it see when it sees you? Does it see clinging? Does it see the absence of clinging? Does it see fear? Or does it see fearlessness? Does it see anger, resentment, envy? Or does it see love and caring and tending? Does it see greed and lust? Or does it see generosity? What does it see as it comes out? And whatever it sees, when it starts seeing what's here, part of that it starts seeing what is painful and what is not. Nourishing for us, and what is starving, or I don't know if that's the, I don't know what the opposite of nourishment is exactly, but denourishing, unnourishing for us. We start seeing the impact that these mental movements, these mental capacities, mental functioning are on us. And this is not a irrelevant thing to see this, because this is how then we're going to encounter the world through those. That's one of, you know, but if we can see that before our life energy spills out into the world and clarify those, settle them, then the heart can go out and further and see the world without the filter of greed, hate, and delusion. And it isn't that we're like becoming selfish by focusing here, but that's kind of the direction in which the light goes. So if the light shines from the heart, it'll see the crusts and the entanglements and the ways that we react and respond. And it wants to clarify that and free it and loosen it up and to not have it be a hindrance or a block. And then the light of awareness can flow out beyond that, out into the world, and see the world clearly for what it is, or much more clearly. And so there is a way in which this, the whole kind of Buddhist path has a lot of emphasis on what's here in ourselves. The divine, the divinity, the Indra is here with us. But it's not to be limited here. And so rather than seeing that the divine is out there and in here, it's more like the divine is in us, kind of. And then we, by seeing that light, then can shine outwards, out into the world. So to have confidence, to have faith, to engage in a path of practice. The primary function of sadha in the early Buddhist tradition is to have confidence that there is a path of practice, to become free of suffering, become free of the clinging and grasping and craving that is the source of suffering. And that's a beautiful path. And sometimes they do call it a divine path. And then to engage in that path, to put energy or have energy in it or allow for energy and vitality to be awoken and inspired. I remember once when I was a Zen student and I heard a Dharma talk, and someone said something in the Dharma talk that was one of these little bit more perplexing Zen koans. And it just got my imagination, or got me somehow. And I suddenly was on fire. There was all this energy in me. And I went right down to the meditation hall and sat there into the evening, way into the evening, because the spark had been, I guess I had the pilot light on in there. But then someone turned up the flame, or someone lit the pilot, And I had energy and engagement where did that come from? So there can be, sometimes it's something we awaken, sometimes something we apply ourselves, it's manual labor, but sometimes the energy begins flowing of practice. And then there's the mindfulness, the awareness. Awareness is, I prefer the word awareness to translate sati, partly because that has a more impersonal quality to it, or transpersonal or something. I can kind of, when I use the word mindfulness or think about mindfulness, I think more of something that I do and apply. It's up to me to be mindful or something. But awareness is not me doing it. My system is set up to be aware. And I can allow for awareness and make room for awareness. I don't have to do awareness. In fact, I don't know how to do awareness. But I know how to allow awareness to be there. So this is another one of these qualities that kind of flow out. And then samadhi is this unification, the concentration, stability, and stillness, a kind of unruffledness. To have the mind, to have the inner life be unruffled is very important for the presence of wisdom. Because an unruffled inner life is very sensitive to how we get ruffled. If we can really get still and unagitated in here, then we can notice agitation when it rises. If we're very peaceful, unattached, or very little clinging, then we can become start sensitive for the little clinging that's left. And little doesn't mean inconsequential. Can be some of the most powerful clinging we have is very subtle, but difficult to see. And samadhi sets up the stage for awareness to see clearly what is here so that wisdom can operate. And wisdom is when awareness, together with awareness, we see distinctions between what is healthy and what is not healthy, where there's suffering and where there's freedom from suffering. So we see these movements of the heart and the mind to get attached, to cling, to hate, to be aversive, and those that have the opposite. And this is not like a complicated metaphysical exercise. It's not doesn't require a lot of a big belief system. It really requires a heightened sensitivity to how things work within us. And it becomes really obvious, it gets revealed to us that, oh yeah, clinging hurts. And so there's a variety of things that get revealed in the eyes of wisdom. One of them is how impersonal so much of this is. And it isn't that you have to believe that things are impersonal or believe that it's not me, myself, and mine. But as we sit still and watch how things arise, how things occur, it's just like, wow, there's no me in that, no myself in that. It's not, I don't possess any of this. It's not happening to someone else, but it doesn't make any sense to these notions, these ideas of me, myself, and mine. They're just another thing that arise. They're just something else that's occurring, an activity. And those activities of me, myself, and mine, the selfing activities, kind of hurt. It has a stress involved with having them. And they don't really apply. It's like, I love the little idea of taking watercolors and trying to paint on the surface of a river. You know, that doesn't work so well. So at some point, you know, you paint me, myself, and mine on yourself and the world, and it's like doesn't work, you know, just like everything just kind of, it just dissolves right away in the flow of the river, flow of life. So you don't have to believe or get a PhD in study of the not-self or how Buddhism treats the self, because it's not something you have to believe or intellectually understand. There comes a time that's revealed. When things are sharp enough, clear enough, when there's this presence and like a candle flame that's very present, very alive and vital, but completely still. If there's a little puff of air, then you see the movement of the candle. When we're, you know, vitally alive and present and aware and still, we're here, but it's dynamic, but there's no movement. And so it's not really frozen. We're not frozenly still or numb still. There's a dynamism and aliveness in this, but completely still. Then the different puffs and winds of the mind are seen much more. So the Buddha talks about part of the function of wisdom is to have revealed to us he uses the word that me, myself, and mine don't apply here. And there's a freedom that comes from that, given that so much of the attachments we have are around me, myself, and mine. So just that, you know, kind of, you see, that's not what's happening after all. I thought that was happening, but it's not. And the other thing that wisdom sees is that it sees when we're very attentive and present, what gets revealed is how ephemeral everything is, how all the things that we directly experience are coming and going, arising and passing. We're kind of like sitting in a river that's constantly flowing, and it turns out we're just like the river, or we are the river. You know, there's nothing that's solid here, just flowing. And rather than being frightening, which sometimes it is to have this experience of flow, and some people report, when they have this experience, reported it's like snow falling, all the time, looking out the window and they see everything's snow, just little particles flowing down, not like a river, but rather, or rain, Or some people would describe it as sand, sand particles that are just kind of, you know, flowing through or something. So the point being, it's everything feels like little pieces of reality just flowing and moving. It's to have that revealed, to see that movement, and to realize that you can't cling to anything. It doesn't make any sense. You can rest in that river. You can let go. It's kind of like it's a little bit hard. If you see, if you can see a river flowing, water going, and you try your hand to grab the water. Most of the water will get squeezed out your fingers. You can't really, grab a handful of water and walk around with it too far. So you try to grab this flow of our reality. And so that's one part of the wisdom that gets revealed. And so some people who do Vipassana practice have heard that seeing impermanence is supposed to be an important part of the practice. And so they're trying so hard to see it. Meaning they're in the control tower and trying to do the right thing. But it's a revelation. It's more like we sit and practice and then the heart sees it. It becomes shown to us when the time is right. And so we're not greedy for it. We're not the self that's trying to make it happen. We're just trying to get out of the way enough with the get out of the way. So these indriyas, these five faculties can do their work. And is there something in you that you call confidence or faith? There had to be, especially those of you who are here all day. maybe there's other reasons to be here, but I think there has to be something that you have confidence in that you would come and sit today like today. You engaged, you had energy, you were here. Some of you fell asleep sometimes or are tired and came and went, but definitely there was an engagement. Maybe sometimes of the day you felt a little bit more surprised by the alertness and energy that was here. And there was a lot of mindfulness here. Maybe some of you felt like you weren't mindful enough and focused on all the times you weren't. But I'm pretty confident that you are probably more mindful here than you would have been if you had been doing the regular things on Saturdays. And there was something happening here. Was there samadhi here? Maybe you didn't recognize it. Maybe you had some high standard for what samadhi is. But my guess is that by the end of the day, those of you here all day, there was a collecting and a gathering and a settling of some kind, that you felt a little bit more connected to yourself or present for yourself, even if your body was tired and sore. That kind of is a collecting or gathering or centering. And is there wisdom here for you? Is there something that you're more sensitive to, more attuned to now because of having spent the day here? If you leave here and go in your car to drive home, are you going to go onto the freeway on-ramp burning rubber and just pushing the gas pedal as fast as you can, and you're so glad to kind of finally be free, and you're going to express it through your car, and you're going to, cut off the people in the freeway, and, how would that feel, and yell at the people who are going too slow? And I think it would feel awful after a day like today. Even if you had a hard time today, I suspect that you're more sensitive and attuned to some way of being, that some of the ways you might be in a day that you're frazzled and upset and distracted, you probably would not feel good about. That's wisdom operating. This doesn't feel good, doesn't feel right. There's another way of being. So I'm very fond of this idea, the concept that's called indriya, because, and that we find it in ourselves, because I feel like it's tremendously respectful or, tremendously appreciative or valuing treasures or important and wonderful things that live in us. And Buddhist practice is not here to diminish our value or say that we're unimportant and we're supposed to kind of just somehow become totally self-effacing, but rather there is a way of letting go of conceit, letting go of me, myself, and mine, but really valuing, deeply, deeply valuing this life force, this life that's here, and to set it free from its limitations that we live under, and to set these indriyas, these faculties free, to give them a life in us that comes from engaging and allowing and appreciating what's here. So it's one of the things that's nice to do is to get a study, learn a little bit more about these indriyas, these five faculties, and learn to identify them in yourself, and learn to identify how they work in you and how they appear and what supports them and how you can support them to be stronger here. And not to think of this like a one-day study to learn that, but this is something, you know, that you're kind of a little bit engaged in on and off for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. It's to kind of explore and get to know these things and know the ins and outs and how they work and how to identify it, how to appreciate them, how to tap into them more often. Because chances are they're here, but they easily get overlooked. They easily other things can take precedence. You know, life takes over. And the advantage of tuning into them and knowing them is then we can hopefully begin coming back to the heart, and we see the world from the heart, but first and foremost through us. And then the world. If we see the world first and not ourselves, as the light shines out, then it's possible to give up or to lose our peace, our good qualities, our ease, our generosity. But if you let the light go, the seeing from the heart to really see what's next, the next layer, and can clarify that, then when you look out into the world, you can engage the world, hopefully, with the world, and not be caught by it, be free. So I hope that made some sense. So then I want to say, now we're coming to the end, that I want to thank you for being here. And everyone who's come, I'm grateful for whenever people come to a day long when we sit. Anytime people sit to meditate together, I feel appreciative and grateful. At the end of pretty much every sitting I do, you know, I bow like this. And it's not required here, but I think some people see me do it and think you're supposed to. But I do it because it's a way of giving expression to the appreciation I have when I come out of meditation. I just feel a lot of appreciation in many different ways. But one of the things I appreciate is the chance to sit and practice with others and all of you. So I appreciate that. It's wonderful that we had this today. And may it be that whatever benefit that this practice has today, that the beautiful light inside of us can flow out into the world in a way that brings benefits to the world, and that the world becomes a better place for everyone. There's plenty of people who struggle, oppressed, and may it be that we help people feel less oppressed and more free and able to live happily in this world. So that's it. And we're ending 10 minutes early, which means that you can drive home with much, you don't have to hurry. You have 10 minutes extra to kind of just find your way home happily and mindfully. Thank you.